program you are about to hear, Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, is parody, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the Church of the Subgenius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech. Tonight we're going to celebrate Watergate with the good doctors of the Lymph Node Institute.
This is Boris Karloff speaking. This is the story of a house. 14 brides have been married in it. 2 silver weddings have been celebrated there. 20 babies were born in the upstairs rooms. The address? Well, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C. For more than 150 years, it has been the seat not only of this country's executive power, but of an ideal of American family life. When it was built, a coat of white paint was laid over the gray Virginia sandstone of its walls, and from that day, the people of the nation have called it the White House. The plan for the White House was drawn by Captain James Hoban, an Irishman by birth and a resident of Charleston, South Carolina, who won a $500 prize offered by Congress for the best design. And time has proved it to be a noble one. 14 decades of whimsical fashion have passed through the interior, affecting furniture and draperies, but the house itself, though the oldest public building in Washington, has never gone out of style. The cornerstone was laid on October the 13th, 1792. George Washington, though, didn't live to occupy the house. Labor troubles, congressional slowness, and national poverty combined to delay the work, so that it was still not finished when in 1800 the Adamses threw open its doors at its first reception. Only 14 years later, this fine new first house of the nation was burned during the War of 1812. Fortunately, Mr. Hoban was still alive to guide the reconstruction after the war, and by the time the fashionable Monroes entered it, a finer White House opened its doors. From then on, it has gone through much the same evolution as other old American homes. First, it was lit by candlelight, till Fillmore's day in 1851 when gas came in. Then, during the administration of Benjamin Harrison, the new sparkle of electricity. Gaiety and sadness. In the white and gold east room of the White House have lain in state the bodies of Presidents William Henry Harrison, Taylor and Harding, who sickened and died in office, and of Lincoln, Garfield and McKinley, victims of assassination. And at such times the whole room has been draped in black, even to the chandeliers. There's been much debate on the subject of, is the White House haunted by all these voices from the past? In the daytime, one isn't likely to think so, but late at night sometimes, there does seem to be a feeling of the presence of other lives. And the American people feel the presence in the White House of those lives. So many of them faithful and strong, some few immortally great. The story of the White House is, in a way, the story of life in these United States through the years since its beginning as a nation. But for a more contemporary view of life in these United States,
the President of the United States had to live by the laws of the United States. In that sense, it took the highest office of the land and reaffirmed the fact that we did not have a king, we did not have a dictator, we had an elected president, and there is nothing out there that makes him any more special than Joe Smith on the street when it comes to abiding by the laws of the United States.
We have to be fair. It involves the higher the mountains, the king of the mountain, and we're trying to keep suppress the facts and so forth.
We're not going to sit by and let them rewrite history. We're going to continue throwing their own words back at them. I believe in having one battle. I did not battle for the things I believe.
I have lost the election.
One last thing.
We didn't win.
We've had a lot of fun. One last thing.
The good, the bad, the ugly. This is the truth. I did probably the grossest misjudgment that I've made in my life. I then tried to paper over that whole thing by sending two phony documents back to Mr. Robinette.
But we do.
It was not an exercise in good judgment. The good, the bad, and the ugly. This is the truth. I did probably the grossest misjudgment that I've made in my life. I then tried to paper over that whole thing by sending two phony documents back to Mr. Robinette. It was not an exercise in good judgment.
I believe in reading. I believe. I believe they should said I battle. Battle for the things I believe. One last thing. You've had a lot of fun. I believe in reading. I believe. I believe they should said I battle. Battle for the things I believe. One last thing. You've had a lot of fun. I believe in reading. I believe. I believe they should said I battle. Battle for the things I believe. One last thing. You've had a lot of fun. I believe in reading. I believe. I believe they should said I battle. Battle for the things I believe. One last thing. You've had a lot of fun.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Bandwagon.
music line. Smash the control images. Smash the control machine.
Glittering generalities. Vagueness. Rationalization. Simplification. Transfer. Least of evils. Name calling. Plain folks.
Follow the money.
Social disapproval. Virtue words. Slogans. Testimonials. Official sanction. Incredible truths. Insinuation. Selective omission. Lying and distortion. Change of pace.
Follow the money.
Stalling. Shift of scene. Repetition. Repetition. Repetition.
Forget the myths that the media has created about the White House. The truth is, these are not very bright guys, and things got out of hand.
Why, Senator. In context with the way things were at the time, I did not think it unusual that we rushed out the back door and burned up all the records. No, I don't think that was an unusual procedure, no. Did you hear the lines like that? Kind of unwitting, fantastic humor. No, I did not think that was unusual that we carried $742,000 in two green satchels down the back door and snuck across town disguised as ice cream men. No, well, we often do things like that. Speaking of that, aren't you fascinated with the fantastic amounts of money that are involved?
They got to have a straight damn line. That, of course we raise money. Be very honest about it. But we raised money for a purpose that we thought was perfectly proper.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't want to shut them up. These men were guilty.
Yeah, right.
And they were trying to shut them up. We didn't want them to talk to the press.
Yeah.
That's perfectly legitimate, isn't it? Or is it legitimate not to
want them
to talk to the press?
Yes, we often kept the $700,000 to $922,000 in our safe for petty cash. Things that may arise. No, we never ask anybody what they needed it for. They just came in and said, give me $300,000, and he had the right signature on the slip there, so I gave it to him. In cash, you say? In cash? Well, yes, that's the way we proceeded at that time under our system that we were using at that time. We proceeded that way. That's our standard procedure, yes. I see. You gave him then, you gave this man who you did not recognize, a man that you had never seen before, $354,000 according to this memo, $354,000.72. You gave that man that money, and you did not know what it was to be used for, and you gave that man that money, and you did not know that man. You never recognized that man before. Is that correct? I have to explain that.
God damn it, all these guys that participated in raising the money and so forth have got to stick to their line that they did not raise this money to obstruct justice.
Well, I sure didn't think they were. I didn't think they were, and I don't think they did.
Well,
with maybe some exceptions.
Right. Of course, they will,
So I cannot see what the drift of the question is the senator wishes to make. The point seems to me totally irrelevant. But you say you did not recognize that man then that came in and asked you for $375,000 for an unspecified task. You did not recognize that man. Is that correct? And not necessarily totally correct, Senator. I did recognize the fact that he was the sort of man that did work for the committee at the time. There are many people who come in and come out and leave and rejoin committees at the time of a political campaign, which I do not necessarily at first glance recognize. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that I did not recognize this man. However, there is a strong possibility that I did not. According to the best of my recollections of the day, and according to according to what my counsel says, there's a strong possibility I did not recognize him. Now, I'm not saying that I wish to contradict the testimony of an earlier witness. However, there is a strong possibility that this is so.
The Very Proper Gander, a very short story by James Thurber, from his book, Fables for Our Time. Not so long ago, there was a very fine gander. He was strong and smooth and beautiful, and he spent most of his time singing to his wife and children. One day, somebody who saw him strutting up and down in his front yard and singing remarked, "There is a very proper gander." An old hen overheard this and told her husband about it that night in the roost. They said something about propaganda, she said. "I have always suspected that," said the rooster, and he went around the barnyard the next day telling everybody that the very fine gander was a dangerous bird, more than likely a hawk in gander's clothing. A small brown hen remembered a time when at a very great distance she had seen the gander talking to some hawks in the forest. They were up to no good, she said. A duck remembered that the gander had once told him that he did not believe in anything. He said to hell with the flag, too, said the duck. A guinea hen recalled that she had once seen somebody who looked very much like the gander throw something that looked a great deal like a bomb. Finally, everybody snatched up sticks and stones and descended on the gander's house. He was strutting in his front yard, singing to his children and his wife. "There he is," everybody cried, "hawk lover, unbeliever, flag hater, bomb thrower." So they set upon him and drove him out of the country. Moral? Anybody who you or your wife thinks is going to overthrow the government by violence must be driven out of the country.
Is there any way at all that you're going to talk to Ziegler, that you can get out the fact that you have conducted a thorough investigation?
We'll work on that. I think there is.
I think we have to get that out,
right,
don't you?
I think so.
The president is calling the signals.
I suspect that somebody's going to put it together. My hunch is the New York Times will.
Bob's up.
I'm clean. Yeah, I wish I did have a bombshell. I don't even have a firecracker. I'm sorry. I got a call from somebody in the CIA saying he got a call from the best New York Times reporter on this, saying exactly that I supposedly had a bombshell. Would you let me in on
it? So now the rumors are about you.
And I said, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I don't.
Okay, Robert, what were you not telling us that night?
I did know that back, over 2 years ago, at the end of a very long interview, substantive interview for my book, Plan of Attack, a source had, when I asked about Joe Wilson, told me that Wilson's wife worked at the CIA as a WMD analyst. That's true, but every time somebody appears on your show talking about the news or giving some sort of analysis, there are going to be things that they can't talk about. It's not at all unusual. There are all kinds of things. I'm working on a book.
And his conduct is inexcusable, even though it seems to be in the process of being excused. Here's a guy who committed not a momentary lapse, but a premeditated and prolonged act of extremely unethical conduct. You know, he spent 2 years going on shows, attacking this investigation, questioning whether a crime was committed, all the time knowing that he was a witness, that he was engaged in the same type of conduct. But you know what? Bob's going to survive. It's perfectly clear because he's Bob. There is a certain elite, a government and media elite, and he is one of the people at that table.
So somebody's going to start stringing all this together. We could just say that we've had a job of work going on for several years.
You could say that the president, because of the charges that have been made, wanted an independent investigation made, and he ordered, directed you to make it. You've made an independent investigation of the situation, because the president wants, if there's anybody who is guilty in this thing, he said he must, through the judicial process, be brought to the bar. Is that what you'd say?
Yeah. I want to know the truth. That's why I've instructed this staff of mine to cooperate fully with the investigators. Full disclosure, everything we know, the investigators will find out. I have no idea whether we'll find out who the leaker is. Partially because, in all due respect to your profession, you do a very good job of protecting the leakers.
He's obviously flailing around like a wild man at the present time. But,
no, he's not really. I think he was earlier he was frantic.
I don't know all the facts. I want to know all the facts. Best place for the facts to be done is by somebody who's spending time investigating it. I would like this to end as quickly as possible so we know the facts. And if someone committed a crime, they will no longer work in my administration.
You could say the president wants this matter cleaned up once and for all, right? It's been hanging around and yacked about, and innocent people have been hurt in the process, and charges being thrown around. Now we've got a judicial process, and we want this thing finished.
Beyond that, you've had all kinds of senators and congressmen calling for the appointment of special commission and all that kind of thing.
So you're it. Right.
They had no sense of the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. They believed that dissent, people who might march and say things against the administration, were subversive, were people who were un-American, rather than that this is the very thing America's all about, which is the right of the people to dissent.
Patriotic is active to disagree with the president. It didn't bother me. What bothers me is when people are irresponsibly using their positions and playing politics.
The thing that worries me is the possibility of somebody charging an obstruction of justice problem. In other words, the subsequent action would worry me more than anything. That area. That general area. Of course, that was. I want to bring you within what had to be done.
Hell, yes. No second thoughts. That's nothing wrong.
Today, I accepted the resignation of Scooter Libby. Scooter's worked tirelessly on behalf of the American people and sacrificed much in the service to this country. He served the Vice President and me through extraordinary times in our nation's history. Special Counsel Fitzgerald's investigation and ongoing legal proceedings are serious. And now the process moves into a new phase. Thank you all very much.
He's got problems. He doesn't anything. You know, he's well, that's right. You know what I mean? My own opinion of that is that he just will hang in where he is. I mean, I think I think that's in as good shape as it can be. You never know. A lot of pressures on him, right? Pressures. Sure are.
And you don't know how much will come out in what way either. I mean, that's...
Here come Dumb George. 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 Everybody together in the chorus. Here come Dumb George. Here come Dumb George, Boogaloo, Boogaloo, baby. Here come Dumb George. Here come Dumb George. Dumb, Dumb George.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century, and how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state government?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. Sovereignty. You've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And
too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love to women all across this country. Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
And
But he's still the same person I met at a backyard barbecue in Midland, Texas, and married 3 months later.
And so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Just lay down and die. It's torture to death. That's what we call it. joke about this if you can. Assassination.
Are you trying to organize or prevent one?
Prevent. They would have to take reprisals. Everybody would suffer.
They've heard. They are aware. And they don't need anyone's help.
They don't believe me.
Many times bitten, forever shy. But they are not shy. They love to listen.
Jamming.
Jamming? Domestic science?
You learn about jamming one of these days. It's the most important ways of fighting back.
All right, enlighten me now.
No. I tell lies, remember?
Call in any time you like.
But my safety is unimportant as long as my people are imprisoned.
Now, when you're queen, you will know that no ruler is truly safe or secure as long as her people are not free.
I'm here to deliver a warning.
A warning? What about?
A plot to kill you.
To what?
To kill you. Assassinate you.
Huh?
Assassinate you.
I don't believe it.
They should have told you there are some unhappy people here.
Yes, well, I have seen the list of malcontents. It might interest you to know that you happen to be top of the bill.
I do my best to live up to it.
Yeah, what, by saving my despicable life?
Not for your sake.
Oh, what then?
If they succeed in killing you, what action would your people take?
Oh, well, they would punish those responsible for... What else would you expect them to do?
Punish everyone. A mass reprisal, a never-to-be-forgotten deterrent.
Oh, I see, yeah. Well, I still don't believe it. My observers would have told me that they do see and hear everything, you know.
They don't believe everything.
You're referring to jamming?
No, jamming. What?
Yes, well, we know we expected something like this, that they'd try to get through to us through a dupe. Mm. So they chose you to lead us into believing their fantasies, eh? Well, did they tell you how they're going to go about it, or where, when? Would you find out for me? Because the laugh will do me an awful lot of good.
You may find out yourself, quite suddenly. In which case, you won't be allowed.
I call them dogs. And if they're lapping up their own vomit, the only way to stop them is with a lash.
But dogs only obey their own nature, so why shouldn't we forgive them?
Dogs can be taught many useful things, but not if we forgive them every time they obey their own nature.
I left orders that I was not to be disturbed.
I have to say, won't wait.
I know what it is. Tomorrow, after I've handed over office, I'm to be assassinated.
For assassinated, substitute, executed.
Since it's arranged by my own people, you mean?
You don't mind?
Of course I mind. It's just that, well, I never thought it would happen to me.
It never does. To anybody. But it can be prevented.
Preventing is only postponing. We never fail. Anyway, why should you care what happens to me?
I don't. But innocent people will be blamed.
I know. I'm sorry, but there's nothing that I can do. I can think of better ways to die.
And better causes to die for.
No, nothing can go wrong now. I'll stake my future on it. Well, thank you, sir. Yeah, I know you will.
People who live here are doing their best under very hard circumstances.
If you say so, Grace. But is their best really good enough?
That's what I want to use the power for, if you don't mind. I want to make this world a little better. If there's any town this world will be better without, this is it.
Yes, and so the great day is nearly over. It went off rather well, I thought. Better than planned. And now you can look forward to your own retirement, and I'm sure they'll arrange something equally suitable for you when the day comes.
Awful work! Where the hell is nothing falling? What the ghost are you guys doing up there?
the tiger who understood people. Once upon a time, there was a tiger who escaped from a zoo in the United States and made his way back to the jungle. During his captivity, the tiger had learned a great deal about how men do things, and he thought he would apply their methods to life in the jungle. The first day he was home, he met a leopard, and he said, "There's no use in you and me hunting for food. We'll make the other animals bring it to us." "How'll we do that?" asked the leopard. "Oh, easy," said the tiger. "You and I will tell everybody that we're going to put on a fight, and that every animal will have to bring a freshly killed boar in order to get in and see the fight. Then we will just spar around and not hurt each other. Later, you can say that you broke a bone in your paw during the second round, and I'll say I broke a bone in my paw during the first round. Then we will announce a return engagement, and they'll have to bring us more wild boars." "I don't think this will work," said the leopard. "Oh, yes, it will," said the tiger. "You just go around saying you can't help winning because I'm a big palooka. And I'll go around saying I can't lose because you're a big palooka. And everybody will want to come and see the fight." Now, so the leopard went round telling everybody that he couldn't help winning because the tiger was a big palooka. And the tiger went round telling everybody he couldn't lose because the leopard was a big palooka. The night of the fight came, and the tiger and the leopard were very hungry because they hadn't gone out and done any hunting at all. They wanted to get the fight over as soon as possible and eat some of the freshly killed wild boars, which all the animals would bring to the fight. But when the hour of the combat came, none of the animals at all showed up. "The way I look at it," a fox told them, "is this. If the leopard can't help winning and the tiger can't lose, it'll be a draw, and a draw is a very dull thing to watch, particularly when fought by fighters who are both big palookas." The animals all saw the logic of this and stayed away from the arena. When it got to be midnight, it was obvious that none of the animals would appear and there wouldn't be any wild boar meat to devour. The tiger and the leopard fell upon each other in a rage. They were both injured so badly, and they were both so worn out by hunger, that a couple of wild boars came wandering along, attacked them, and killed them easily. Moral: if you live as humans do, it will be the end of you.
All the while, see, I'm sitting on my side, I says, "Oh, this is all of mankind parading before all of other mankind. Let ye titi la ta 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 ti la ta." What would we do in this world without trouble? I mean, just think that nothing happened. Gloria Steinem would be out of business. Norman Mailer would write no more books. There'd be no more senators. There'd be no more witnesses. There'd be no more plays, no more novels. What would we do without trouble? So tonight, folks, let us bend in abject supplication. Let us lower our eyes and deeply consider the thanks we owe to that single thing, trouble. We owe a lot to it. Would you please, Bill, reset that in there? I'm going to use that. But we do. Let's give credit where it's due. Trouble is what life is about. If we didn't other people's troubles, primarily. If we didn't have trouble, oh, God, it would be such a dull life, wouldn't it? I think that's why secretly people are vaguely repelled by the concept of heaven. And they're vaguely attracted by the concept of hell. Well, let's see.
And frankly, I think it's just as well.
He's right.
And the point is, if he's going to have this pissing contest, get all right out and fight it out. And it'll be a bloody goddamn thing. But, you know, in a strange kind of a way, that's life, isn't it? He'll be interested and he'll be rough as a cob and will survive. And some people, you'll even find Mississippi, you'll find a half dozen people will be for the president.
A lot more than that.
Well, do still have some support in the country, I hope, but yep. We shall see. You agree?
Absolutely.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Despite all the rules and all the rest, I think there's still a hell of a lot of people out there, from what I've seen, or, you know, they want to believe. That's the point, isn't it?
For sure. Do and do.
Well, I kind of, you know, I just enjoy it. It's all part of the summer madness, and what would we do? Wouldn't life be boring if there wasn't chicanery and evil everywhere? Just seriously think about that. You know, George Bernard Shaw said it. He said, you know, let's face it, when he was asked about his play, Don Juan in Hell, and he was, I can't tell whether or not that play, Mr. Shaw, is pro-evil, or whether it's pro-good, or whether it's kind of ambiguous there. And he says, well, you know how Shaw talks. Let's face it, the devil gets all the best lines. And he's quite right, because we are all secretly attracted to evil. However, we all aspire to good, which is not quite the same thing as being attracted to good. Do you agree, Larry? And I am making no case neither for good nor evil, but you find that the case can be made for both. Seriously, if you're looking for excitement, try evil. If you're looking for public approval, try good. However, public approval doesn't pay the rent. And this sneaky evil that we all live among. By the way, that reminds me, speaking of the devil.
Listen up. Me name be Buchanan. Me knows enough things about politics. Get involved, mock daddies. Y'all better realize that nothing be a better way to get y'all kicks. West Side, IE.
If you would like more information on the Church of the Subgenius, you could write to them at P.O. Box 181417, Cleveland Heights, Ohio 44118-1417, or visit them online at subgenius.com.
If you like us, like we like you, lymphnode.net,
or write to us at
P.O. Box
670-541 Marietta,
Georgia
30066-0126.
There's been a lot of talk about this next song. This song is not a rebel song. This song is Sunday, like Sunday. I can't believe the news today. Can't close my eyes and make it go away. How long? How long? Must we sing this song? How long?
Too long. For too long.
Tonight, we can be as one. Tonight,
tonight,
tonight. Broken bottles under children's feet.
Bodies strewn across the
damn streets.
But I won't heed the battle call.
It pushed my back up
against the wall. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Let's roll. And the battle's just begun. This many lost and who has won. The trenches dug within our hearts. Mothers, children, brothers, sisters, torn apart. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday.
How long? How long? Must we sing this song? How long?
Too long. For too long.
Tonight,
we can be as one.
Tonight,
tonight,
tonight.
Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Let's roll it.
Anyone who wants more details on my agenda can find them online. The web address is not very imaginative, but it's easy to remember.
Park.com.
Wipe the tears from your eyes. Wipe your tears away. Wipe your tears away. Wipe
Wipe your tears away. Wipe your bloodshot eyes. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Let's roll.
One fact is fiction,
and TV
reality.
And today the millions cry. We eat and drink while tomorrow they die.
Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Standing by on Q1. 2 5-inch flag shells.
They're okay. Ready. Danger from the first two.
R1.
Bombs bursting in air. The bombs bursting in air.
Vonka.
And the rockets' red glare.
Vonka. I beg your pardon. Vonka song. I beg your pardon.
Poeta song.
The well-known Vonka song.
The bombs, bombs, bombs bursting in air.
I beg your pardon.
And the rockets, the rockets, the rockets' red glare.
Vonka song.
The intense patriotism surging across our country carried the national anthem to new and different heights.
Targeted.
All the way to the top of the music charts.
Vonka, Vonka song.
Poeta song.
I am an American.
You're in. Specimen.
Listen to my words.
Bombs, rockets, bombs, rockets.
You're a specimen collector.
Before you even start, I am an American.
I will escort you to the toilet to observe the passing of urine.
All he tried to do is obfuscate, to confuse.
I am an American.
The bombs bursting in air.
Song.
And the red glare.
Sounds more like a screen door. Dale caught in a screen door.
I beg your pardon. Are you dissatisfied with the song?
Sounds more like a screen with a screen caught in a screen door.
Well, you know, it wasn't meant to be sung while sober.
Yeah? Screen door caught in a tail screen.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah?
No, it actually began as a drinking song.
Oh, yeah?
Doesn't just hearing it make you wish you weren't sober?
Oh, yeah?
Oh, you mean,
yes.
Its author, Francis Scott Key, might have been charmed by topping the top 40, but was this really what he had in mind?
The bombs, red glare.
Or better yet,
the sweet, delicious coldness of the first bite of peppermint ice cream on the 4th of July.
Or better yet,
drink up.
Was this really his song?
Drink up. Well, you wish you weren't sober?
Who is?
Anacreon, a Greek poet who celebrated...
Screen door.
Drinking.
Well, I do.
Drink up.
To be free.
Yes, the tune of our national anthem was lifted from an old English drinking song.
Yeah?
Drink up. Doesn't just hearing it make you wish you weren't sober?
Who is?
The people who wrote it certainly weren't.
Drink up.
Francis Scott Key wasn't either when he stole the tune.
I bet I'd have liked him.
Oh, you would have liked Anacreon even more.
Anacreon.
Anacreon.
Well, I do.
Even more.
Anacreon.
Well, all the good things in life.
Oh, you mean,
Yes.
Let's sing it again.
Vonka Star Spangled. Vonka song.
Say, can
no, no, no. Those
you...
are the new words, remember?
Oh, so who knows the old ones?
The song sung.
Ready, gentlemen?
In pubs throughout England.
To Anacreon in hell. I am an American. In full glee.
I am an American.
Now we stand by the rails and receive a hair-raising impression of how this projectile sounds as it passes by.
To be free.
The rockets burst in air.
When the
sun's around, to be free, and the bombs red glare.
Drink up.
the separation of the first stage at Gurnah.
Freedom to think.
The intermittent sounds of the guidance rockets.
Freedom to speak.
The separation of the second stage.
To pray, to read, to argue, to pray, to criticize. Freedom to eat and sleep, to work and play without fear. Freedom to live one or 200 million different lives. I am an American.
Drink up. Let it be a holiday in your house of eternity.
Being quiet, worst negative act.
Every American has at least one thing to be thankful for.
A cheap shot, just not true.
But he still sold a flag and not a shirt.
It isn't there in the decks?
No, no. I thought it was beautiful. But then there you go.
Can you afford to ignore this promo? Individually, each of us is buffeted by social tidal waves.
Generally powerless except to create peaceful temporary islands of slack with his or her own self, kin, or buddies.
But as one group, collectively acting and moving like one relentless hydra whose parts are not the same,
encircling the world in a monstrous belt of unpredictability,
the world's sub-genie will be immune to the false slack of the pink boys and shall overcome the conspiracy.
Our brains are too well-worn, too smudged, and too stained to be completely washed by their insidious
mind-cleaning techniques. We don't worry about the conspiracy driving us crazy because we already are crazy.
We don't worry about the new depression reducing us to barbarism.
Subgeniuses are barbarians.
We seek something better, something for nothing.
Something like Bob's Slacktime Funhouse every Saturday night at 1 a.m. right here on WREK Atlanta. Ah.